from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Coming up on Forum this morning, we discuss the change of CEOs at BP, and we'll focus on questions of accountability and responsibility where chief executive officers are concerned. Will change in leadership at BP make a difference in the cleanup efforts, change the corporate culture, or instill more public trust? And how much responsibility falls on or should fall on the shoulders of a company's CEO? Then at 9:30, author and McSweeney's editor Dave Eggers joins us to discuss a new project he spearheaded that is designed to help students struggling with the ever-escalating costs of college education. Forum is next, after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Good morning and welcome to this morning's Forum. In the ongoing wake of the Gulf of Mexico oil spill disaster, BP announced yesterday that by mutual agreement of the company's board, Tony Hayward will step down as CEO effective the 1st of October and will be replaced by fellow executive director Robert Dudley. We want in this opening half-hour Forum segment to discuss this change in leadership, but also to turn our attention to the role of the CEO. How much ought CEOs be expected to be responsible for company disasters or failures, and to what extent is it appropriate to hold them accountable? Join us in studio for the discussion about the changeover at BP and the role of the CEO is Professor Robert Sutton. He's professor of management science and engineering at Stanford, author of Good Boss, Bad Boss, How to Be the Best and Learn from the Worst, which will be published in September. And Bob Sutton, good to have you here. Welcome.
It's great to be here, Michael.
Well, where do we begin? Let's begin by talking about Tony Hayward. I mean, he made some public relations disasters, and I guess to some extent one can see his being replaced because he's a Brit and this is an American disaster, because of his PR disasters, perhaps more than the disaster itself or not?
I think it's more than the disaster itself, and just and I think many of us have this reaction of the guy is just like a jerk and being angry at BP. But in some ways, the thing that fascinates me about it is that if I was going to follow somebody, I would pick him. Because in addition to the terrible objective things that have happened with the spill, he has just messed up repeatedly and showed all these signs of power poisoning and indiscretion and the inability to take other people's perspective. And so from my perspective, looking at it, I think more objectively, it's actually great for BP and maybe bad for all of us, because what happens is there's this lovely symbolic change, and then you get to sort of like follow somebody who's really horrible. So we all focus our attention on the CEO, and it distracts attention away from the more objective problems.
So he helps as a kind of scapegoat, you're saying, almost.
Oh, Bob Dudley is a really lucky guy, because even the way he went out, he had this quote yesterday, which hasn't gotten a lot of play. I'm talking about Hayward that things were going great, but he stepped off the curb and got hit by a bus. It's just sort of like this notion, like when something bad happens, it's not my fault.
Well, it was also he wanted his life back, but also saying that in the wake of 11 deaths and not apologizing and not seeming empathic enough, his lackluster appearance in front of Congress. I mean, you can go through the list, the yachting race that he went to. I mean, it's just an absolutely PR disaster. But like I said, how much should he be held accountable for the disaster itself?
Well, so this gets into, to me, the notion of, well, so how much do CEOs really matter in terms of how much influence they have? And if you look at research, especially for a large company like that, the CEO is probably worth no more than 5, maybe 10% of the action, but they get half the blame and half the credit.
Should stop with them then. Huh?
Well,
it does stop with them.
Well, whether or not it should, it does. So there's this symbolic problem. And if you think about what BP is, it's just this enormous worldwide company with all these enormous problems. And if you actually wanted to figure out where leadership mattered most at BP, it would probably be the collection of managers, bosses, leaders they have at lower levels. But he gets the blame for it. But when you're a CEO, that's sort of what your job is to do the symbolic, is to symbolically represent the company, since you get all the credit and all the blame. And I must say, in terms of doing that, which is probably the most important part of his job and the part that only the CEO can do, he's been absolutely atrocious. And as I've said, to me, it's sort of a double-edged sword because, you know, when I see him, I get this physically sick feeling in my stomach because he's so inept and such horrible things have happened. I mean, I've watched Anderson Cooper has done a brilliant job just ripping him into pieces, for example. But on the other hand, in some ways, the theatrics are dangerous for all of us because what they do is they distract attention from a whole bunch of systemic problems that BP has and needs to fix. And they're just sort of like bringing in a guy who is, well, he's from Louisiana and he's an American. So it sort of looks, it's better in terms of the pictures. But whether or not there's going to be something beyond symbolic repair remains to be seen.
Well, that's the big question. Can you just do a little facelift? I mean, Tony Hayward may have failed in a crisis and therefore he's on his way out. He's going to Russia, in fact.
He's sent to Siberia.
The latest I heard. Yeah, maybe Siberia. But the fact is you've got new leadership and that. Is that just PR facelift, or can you change the culture, the corporate culture?
Well, so corporate cultures do change. It's not an easy thing to do, but corporate cultures do change, and when they change, Rosa Beth Moskander wrote a book about this, and other folks have as well. When they change, they change when something really bad and something really upsetting has happened, and so if there was ever a time when the culture might change, there's some possibility that it actually will happen. Now, whether it will happen, you've got an insider, you've got the same industry infrastructure. And from what I can tell from reading and watching the reports, one of the biggest problems that you had there, very similar to what happened with NASA and the space shuttle, by the way, there's some interesting parallels, is that you had a culture that was focused on efficiency and hitting time and schedule rather than on quality. And that's a very difficult shift to make. And oil companies, although it's easy to despise all of them, even though we all buy cars and use their product, or most of us, oil companies do vary in their safety cultures. And obviously, it's one of the worst safety cultures. So if there's ever a time when change can occur, this is it. But whether or not this guy, Bob Dudley, who is an insider and has been part of presumably the problem for a long time, can do it remains to be seen. Nonetheless, to go back to the symbolics, he's a really lucky guy because, and so is BP. The other thing they did that was very smart, the board did, was they kind of waited until 2 weeks after the leakage was stopped. So that way, all the slings and arrows went at this guy. And in some ways, the worse job he did, the better it was because it looks like it's better symbolic repair.
Talking to Professor Robert Sutton, who's Professor of Management Science and Engineering at Stanford, and talking again just about how much a CEO can make a difference. When CEOs come in, new CEOs, and this is an inside guy we're talking about,
right,
with BP, but they usually pick their own staff up at the top, at the apex of the hierarchy. They want their own people there. They, of course, can change the culture to some degree, I think, as you've intimated. But think about the example of Patagonia, where they say environment is first,
right,
and our employees, and then profits. You know, I mean, it would be hard to do something like that with BP.
It would be hard. Maybe a better – I agree with BP, it would be impossible. But a good and interesting experiment going on is what's happened with General Motors, which was sort of interesting that President Obama fired the CEO of General Motors as it is. But if you look at what Ed Whitaker is doing, he's doing the kind of stuff that if there's some hope of cultural change – and I had a lot of contact with General Motors for a decade, and in some ways it's similar to BP and how –
it's just a behemoth. Yeah.
It's absolutely huge. Nobody can understand it. They've got all these difficult processes. But he replaced virtually the whole top team. He has no patience with their stupid procedures. And one of my favorite things that he did, General Motors being the most inept company I've ever dealt with, their core competence when I worked with them was to explain why they couldn't do anything different. So it's just say no. You know, the Obama thing was, yes, we can. Their motto should have been, no, we can't. That's what their core competence. But he's gotten rid of a lot of the procedures that got in the way. And so that's the kind of change you need. And changing the top teams is very important. And I'm concerned that this new guy at BP is just going to do more of the same because he's from the same culture.
I think we've had a change as far as CEOs are concerned. They used to be, especially during the boom, kind of iconic figures. And
right.
They were, you know, literally captains of industry. And, you know, you had the examples, obviously, of Bill Gates and Steve Jobs and people like that. There seems to be now, firstly, a great deal of grievance about their high salaries, especially here in the United States, and also a lot of sort of, if there is such a word, disempowering of CEOs, particularly in terms of the luminary character that they had before. I'm going to open up the phone lines. In fact,
Sure. Let
me do that now and invite those of you listening to join us if you have questions or comments about what we're talking about here, which is the responsibility and accountability of chief executive officers, but also the changeover at BP and what it may bode or what it may mean. Our toll-free number is 866-733-6786, and we do welcome your calls. And again, you can join us now at 866-733-6786 or send us an email. Our email address is simply forum@kqed.org. You can also post a question or comment on our website by going to kqed.org/forum and clicking on the segment. We're talking to Professor Robert Sutton, who is professor of management science and engineering at Stanford and the author of forthcoming book, Good Boss, Bad Boss, How to Be the Best and Learn from the Worst. And some of you may just have some thoughts about whether you think this cleanup can go any better under new leadership. But talking about CEOs in general, we got the example of McCain. I'm not talking about the former presidential candidate or senator from Arizona, but in Canada, or the old Tylenol case. And those are good examples of CEOs who got up right in front, apologized, went to the heart of things, and were able to deal with them effectively.
Effectively. So the Michael McCain case, which most Americans didn't pay much attention to because it was sort of in the middle of our intense election in 2008, the basic story is this guy was CEO of kind of a family-run business called Maple Leaf that sells luncheon meats and the like. And they had a bacteria problem. One of their plants killed 20 people. I mean, it sounds to me like something like a company you can't recover from. And the short story is that he stood up and he said, it's our fault. We apologize. He didn't say it's our fault, but it wasn't an apology, non-apology. And in fact, when the Canadian press said, well, isn't the government inspector's fault? He said, no, it's our responsibility.
Excuse me, nobody was killed, but an apology, non-apology would be sort of like Steve Jobs.
Right. Yeah, that actually was a fairly classic apology, non-apology. But the interesting thing about it is, and then he did the smart thing you're supposed to do, which is say, here's the plans we're going to implement, and then kept people in touch with the changes they made. But the most amazing thing about it is, well, so the confidence in the company actually has gone up after they killed 20 people with their product. And the other thing which just amazed me, this happened in August of 2008. They settled all the lawsuits by the end of the year. And well, we're both married to lawyers. That's pretty quick. and so as an example of somebody standing up and taking the blame, it actually is a very good point. And that's one of, by the way, the key differences between politics and business. There's some pretty good social science research on this, that when you're a business person, when something goes wrong, you should take responsibility for it, in part because it shows you're in control and you can fix it. But politicians who tend to get reelected tend to blame everything but themselves.
Well, the important thing in business, of course, is establishing credibility and responsibility even more than politics, because people take it for granted that politicians necessarily are not credible.
Right.
And, you know, the things that Tony Hayward did have become part of business management courses in terms of an example of failure, of exactly what not to do.
Yeah. Well, Rosa Beth Moskanner at Harvard actually just put up a list of the things that she did and said, if you reverse this, this is how to be a good boss. And that's why I think Bob Dudley, as I say, is so lucky, and the rest of us may be unlucky, because what's going to happen is, and this is the problem with leaders, we sort of focus on these sort of charismatic or ridiculous figures and give them too much credit and too much blame. And what really matters is the system that underlies them. And even the much sort of worship Steve Jobs, everybody seems to have missed the fact that, well, he went away for about 6 or 7 months. They put another guy in charge. And the company actually did, if anything, better while he was gone. And it's not that I don't think Steve Jobs is great, But this notion that we tend to give them too much credit and too much blame and not realize that there's a system of management that and logistics and people who underlie it, and they're not like these grand architects who are like leading an orchestra where they're in charge of everything. A lot of it is symbolic, and so as a country and the press too, we've got to make sure and focus on the systems, not just to focus on the face we're seeing in front of the media.
I wonder how many people remember the face of the CEO of Toyota. I mean, even though he became that symbolic figure when he was testifying in front of Congress, it's somehow different when it comes from abroad.
Yeah, it is somehow different. And also one of the differences with Japanese and Asian culture in general is that they tend to focus more on the collective than the individual. So that's one reason they pay their CEOs relatively less than we do, is they actually think they're less important. What they think is important is being a member of the team.
Whereas, well, that's true throughout the world, I mean, isn't it? I mean, United States and Israel may be the only examples.
It is true throughout the world, but especially in Asia is where you see the smallest salary differences between the average worker and the senior executives in particular. But it's also true in Europe, too.
Let's bring our callers in, and we'll go right to you, Andrew. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call. Great show. I think this is it's a curious discussion that we're having about CEOs not having that much control. You know, I think of Gerstner and Hurd at HP and the work that they've done. And I was just wondering if you could comment, because it seems like you're saying on one hand, CEOs don't have great control. And on another hand, on the other hand, it's all the systems that are in place and the best CEOs that are able to create the greatest turnarounds are the ones that replace all the systems at the top. So, you know, in a sense, isn't it that the better CEOs realize they can't directly control, but they can influence through leadership and they can replace those systems, and ultimately that's what creates change?
So, Andrew, I think that's a great point. And so that is where CEOs matter, is where they make overall strategic sort of decisions or change the system. But I would still argue, and IBM's actually an interesting case, that when they brought in Gerstner, although he was symbolically this guy from the outside, and if you read his book, he sort of sounds like he did everything. In fact, there was a whole bunch of other changes that happened underneath him that enabled the cultural changes at IBM to take place. But I agree with you that they do matter. I'm not saying that they don't matter. But the thing that I worry about, especially in something like BP or even Toyota, is if you focus too much credit or too much blame on the CEO, you miss the fact that there's a whole bunch of other things that have to happen in the organization. But I agree that they matter, and they especially matter during times of upheaval when they've got the opportunity to change a whole bunch of things at once. But all they can do is set general direction. They can't go in and actually change and fix absolutely everything.
But you know, Tony Hayward promised to laser in on safety. I mean, so when you think of this disaster in the Gulf, and you think of that promise, it's almost like a politician making a promise.
Right.
A chief executive in the White House says, I'm going to promise to deliver on this, and doesn't deliver. Or the exact opposite. A crisis occurs that's antithetical to what the promise was.
Well, I think one of the issues, and I like Andrew's point that there's sort of times and examples where CEOs actually had the power to come in and change everything. But there are some systems that are so entrenched and have such structural constraints that it ends up actually being impossible to change them for just about anybody. In Exhibit 1, by the way, is the state of California. The one thing that Gray Davis and Arnold Schwarzenegger agree on is that the state is ungovernable and nobody can do the job. So good luck to whoever wins.
You know that Governor Schwarzenegger's numbers in the poll are just what Gray Davis's were when he was recalled.
Well, it's an impossible job. And to go back to Andrew's point, there are some organizations that will reach an inflection point in massive failure and resources to change are two of the key things that do allow change to happen. But there are some organizations, and one of my colleagues, Jeff Pfeffer, describes them as brain vacuum jobs. The governor of the state of California is the perfect job. You take this really smart person, you put them in the job, and then they lose like 50 IQ points because it's impossible to do. And so So when the CEO or the head has no power, we're really in trouble.
Truman Capote used to say, if you move to California, your IQ goes down 10 points. I always found that one should contest that, but that's Truman Capote. Let me go to more of your calls. Gregory from Santa Cruz, good morning.
Hey, you're right. Listen to you guys. It's all fine and well trying to come up with these ideas and talk about blame or credit. The only word that's missing with our major business, I guess, is ethics, if you want to call it that, in America, let alone politicians. There's no accountability. Okay, they can do whatever they want. People die in the case of BP, or we go to war against the laws of the world, like Bush. There's no accountability. So they can do whatever they want. They're going to get paid anyway.
All right, now we're talking about maybe something in our broader culture. You know, it occurred to me when Tony Hayward resigned, I thought to myself, is this accountability? Nobody that I know of has been fired for 9/11. So there is something within the whole structure of American civilization where accountability is concerned, it seems to me.
Well, one thing that I think the caller brings up that is disturbing, and you look at all of those situations, there's a sort of protecting the elites. And I think that's what's happening. So even if he doesn't get the job in Russia, Tony still gets $20 million, which is actually that's not bad. So I agree with the point. But one thing I will say about the executives, and this is really sort of elite dynamics, but they feel terrible when they've been publicly shamed. So that might be the main thing we have is people like our caller publicly shaming them. And embarrassment is a very powerful motivator.
Yeah, Charlie Rangel is suffering now, I'm sure, is a good example. We go to Redwood City. Brian, you're on. Good morning.
Hi, good morning. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I actually have a question on the premise of this whole discussion that everyone seems to assume that BP is a bad company, bad corporate culture, and has something inherent in that culture caused this accident. And when we're operating at 2 miles below the sea and doing things that people have never really done before, it seems to me that that's an inherent risk that we're taking in doing deep water drilling in the first place. So I'm wondering if this premise is misplaced in some way and that the corporate culture really isn't necessarily as bad as people are making it out to be, and rather this guy just had a bunch of guffaws and he was a complete idiot and really blew it, but maybe he's a great CEO. I don't know.
Well, I think it's important to separate the mistakes that Tony made from how difficult what they are doing is. But the fact is, if you look at the evidence, they have the worst safety record by far of any of the other oil companies, many of which are doing much of the same thing. So the cultural record is a problem. The other thing that I would add, and this is where the space shuttle analogy comes in, that the criticism for the explosion of both the Columbia and the Challenger by the committees was they were treating something that was experimental, dangerous, and sort of like a research project as a routine operation. And to your point, I think that's also what's going on is they're pushing for efficiency and schedule when they're doing something that's at the limits of human knowledge. So I think that you're right on both of those counts, that yes, what they're doing is incredibly difficult, but maybe they should do it a little bit more slowly and a little bit more carefully instead of doing it as quickly as possible. And to me, those are partly cultural things. And if you look at the other major oil companies, they actually have much better safety records. And in fact, all the evidence is, including the admissions from BP, that they have better safety cultures. So the cultures are definitely part of it. And if you look at it, there's been many fewer problems in deep water drilling platforms that have been done by other companies. So the record's really actually pretty clear.
You also have to bring in, I mean, of course, we talked about culpability with respect to the Gulf disaster, and you bring in Halliburton, and you bring in, politicians, and, I mean, there's plenty of blame to go around,
right,
to put it mildly. So we're not going to necessarily see vast or dramatic changes with Mr. Dudley now as CEO of BP?
Well, let me paint the most optimistic scenario, because I'm generally an optimist despite my concerns. And if he does go through and actually change the top team, change the procedures, and develop a set of incentives where they don't just say you can pull the lever and stop it anytime you want, but they actually reward and encourage and promote people who do it, then there's some hope.
Thank you, Bob Sutton.
Thank you.
Good to spend this time with you. Robert Sutton is professor of management, science, and engineering at Stanford, author of Good Boss, Bad Boss, How to Be the Best and Learn from the Worst. That'll be published in September. Got another segment of Forum coming your way. Dave Eggers will join us. I'm Michael Krasny.